Good evening, everyone. The time being 5:30, I'd like to declare the meeting open. My name is Paula Reet. I'm the Mayor of Kinborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome everybody to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 20th of September, 2021. Welcome to those in the public gallery and also those watching the live stream at home via YouTube. I wish to advise that the council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with the council's policy, I will ask the Acting General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed, thank you.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. The attendees tonight are myself, Councillor Reet, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From the staff, we have the Acting General Manager, Mr Daniel Smee, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr John Breen, the Chief Information Officer, Mr Fred Malt, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Katrina Stevenson, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tasha Tyler-Moore, the Manager of Works, Mr Darren Johnson, the Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Sam Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. We have apologies tonight from the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, and also from the General Manager, Mr Gary Arnold. We move now to page one, the confirmation of the minutes. The recommendation is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 18, held on the 6th of September 2021, be confirmed as a true record. And a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. The workshops held since the last council meeting, we had a workshop last Monday evening, the 13th of September, in relation to risk management. Turning now to page two and the declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they wish to provide? No? Thank you very much. Moving on then to the transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open to closed session or vice versa? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question they would like to ask? Thank you. If you'd like to go over to the lectern and put the light on, press talk so the red light comes on, and if you could just state your name and address at the start and then your question, please.
Haven't got my glasses, sorry. So my name's Karen Tantari from Australian Services Union and I live in Kingston Beach. So my questions tonight relate to Council's Strategic Plan 2020 to 2025 and risks to operational outcomes. And excuse me because I have forgotten my glasses, so I'm just trying to get the light on here. In 2020, Kingborough Council took advantage of an expired enterprise agreement to impose a wage freeze on staff. Kingborough Council ended up experiencing no substantial financial loss due to COVID, yet has to date not adequately reimbursed its employees for the period in which the wage freeze was imposed, nor provided an adequate wage increase to the current bargaining, or in the current bargaining. The fact that the enterprise agreement was recently voted down is testament that employers are feeling undervalued and is representative of a negative work environment. The national minimum wage increase over recent years have been much higher than the Kingborough Council's wage increases, meaning that wages at Kingborough Council are now not much higher than the minimum award rates. The negative enterprise bargaining result...
Point of order, Mayor. Can we have the question, please?
Yes, I'm getting there.
Can we have it now, please, as in per local government?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's been reached. Keep going.
Yeah. With my intro? Or the question. The negative enterprise bargaining result and the current high level of staff turnover appears to show that Kingborough Council is not a desirable place to work at present. Council is struggling to recruit employees to replace the skilled staff it's losing. Given the high turnover rate, negative enterprise agreement negotiation outcome and last year's wage freeze, is Council confident that they are on track to achieve the key principle from the strategic plan of being a desirable place to work, attracting committed and engaged staff through progressive human resource practices and a positive work environment?
Thank you very much for the question. Look, I am aware that there are continuing discussions around an enterprise agreement. I believe a second offer has been made, but I might ask the Acting General Manager if he can provide some more information, because I didn't get an update this morning from the General Manager before he went on leave.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, that is correct. We are in the middle of an ongoing enterprise bargaining agreement process, but to answer the question, yes, we remain confident that we will be able to achieve the objectives set out in Council's strategic plan.
Thank you. And I have a second question. So my next question is through the Chair, and probably to the General Manager. I'm aware he's an apology, but could be on notice. On 27th of May 2020, the General Manager advised that on the 25th of May 2020, Council adopted a notion of motion from the Deputy Mayor, quote, that Council directs the General Manager to implement a 2.8% COVID-19 efficiency dividend across the organisation for all non-salary expenditure in 2020-2021. The General Manager advised, as a result of this outcome, that Council was unable to pay a wage increase to employees in 2020, in effect a wage freeze for everyone, himself included. Could Council please advise how many managers, senior employees on contract, have received a wage increase during the period in which employees have endured a wage freeze?
Thank you. I think we will take that one on notice so that we can get you the accurate information.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else from the public gallery have any questions you'd like to ask? No? Thank you very much. Okay. Questions on notice from the public. There was a question in relation to traffic data from Ms. Kate Lucas and an officer's response from Mr. David Reeve. And for those people who are watching at home, if you did want to submit a question on notice, you should send it to us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Moving to questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? Councillor Bastone. Oh, I didn't see. Sorry. I'll take Councillor Bastone and Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. I was wondering, could we have an explanation as to why the salvage art competition was cancelled a week after the entries closed, please?
I'll ask Dr. Stevenson if she could provide some information on that. Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. We haven't cancelled it. We've postponed it on the basis that we'd only received 10 entries, so we're allowing a longer period. And we're just waiting for confirmation from the Department of Health regarding the availability of the auditorium. We are hoping to have it in November, but currently the COVID booking goes until the 30th of November, so we're just trying to navigate around not having any firm withdrawal dates from the Department of Health, but partially because there weren't many applicants, so we will extend the period and run it later this year.
Thank you. Councillor Grace.
I have a few, Mayor.
Sure.
My first one's regarding police and emergency services. Most wouldn't know, but there was an incident at Ketron on Wednesday where a male was attacked and brutally bashed. It took 50 minutes before a police officer turned up. And that officer that turned up apparently was the Woodbridge policeman. Another 60-odd minutes before an ambulance turned up to the scene. The question from the ratepayers, is that good enough in our populated area? I don't know any other circumstances, but my question is, that's what they want to know.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. As you'd be aware, the provision of police and other emergency services is a state government issue, although having said that, we do have a notice of motion on the agenda this evening that Councillor Gladewright has brought forward in relation to the need for the growing community to have a 24-hour police presence. I did meet with Inspector Burke, the who's been in the role for several months now, a few weeks ago, and I did ask the question about whether the levels of staffing were adequate at Kingston Police Station for our population base, and he indicated that they were. There had been an increase, I believe, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I couldn't give you an exact date, but Kingston was given additional police presence at that time, and that has been maintained. But I'm sure during the discussion on the notice of motion that we will be debating shortly, you could contribute further to that if you wish to.
Yeah, my next question is, Mayor, have you had time yet to look at the bus shelter at Snow?
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Yes, I have. And in fact, it's my understanding, because I did ask the General Manager about this when you last raised it, and my understanding is that there is a difficulty with Metro Tasmania and the status of that bus shelter. They say it is theirs, and they believed that it was not painted at the time when it was done, when it was painted pink. I'm told they believed that approval hadn't been provided by Metro Tasmania to do that, and that is why they then subsequently painted over it. I did mention it to... I had occasion to meet the new Metro manager, CEO, several weeks ago, and I did mention it in passing to her. But I also understand that Councillor Midgley has made inquiries about this as well, and I am trying to work through a solution to that, because I understand that there is a desire from the family to have some sort of recognition on that bus shelter for the loss of their mum and their wife. But we would need the permission of Metro to do that, so we are trying to work through that.
Thank you. Just for a little bit of information, it was the Progress Group back them days that actually built three bus shelters, one at Margate, which Council took away, one at Electrona, and the one down at Lower Snug. They were not built by Metro and never been owned by Metro. We did get approval from Metro, our officer, Council at the time. And why did it take them at the next time, Mayor, you're talking to, why did it take them over 3 years to work out it wasn't their bus shelter? But anyway, I'm happy that you're pursuing that, because these children, and I did pass on the letter from those two boys.
Is there another question?
I've got a couple more.
Yep, sure.
Back 2 years ago when we did the... playground at Snug. It was in the proposal, if I remember rightly, that we were going to put a basketball hoop at the tennis club, at the tennis courts for our elder people that love their basketball. That's not happened.
Okay. I might ask Mr. Smee if he can provide us with some information on that. Mr. Smee.
Yes, through you, Mayor. My recollection of that is that a basketball ring at the tennis courts was one of a number of infrastructure items that came up during the survey that was done, and it was also identified as one of a potential items that could be installed, but there's been no commitment from Council provided to, given to do that, and it would need to be a matter that is included as part of the budget deliberations for next year, because whilst it was discussed, it has never been formalised.
I won't argue with that, but I will go back and look at the agreement. Bruny Island, Council own a block of land at Bruny Island, which we all know that Council tried to sell some time ago, and it was voted unanimously that we would not sell that block of land because it belongs to the ratepayers of Bruny Island. they're in a position where they're trying to develop this block of land, as I understand. They've got a lot of loopholes to go through, which is a pity because it's a public piece of land. One, in particular, is the sewerage that is coming from the hotel onto that block. That is a major, major problem they've inherited.
So what's your question?
The question is, can council look at that problem and advise the hotel owner to remove the sewerage from off that block of land?
Mr. Smee, are you aware of this?
Thank you, Mayor. No, I'm not aware of it. We can certainly have our Environmental Health Department do an assessment, and then it would depend on the circumstances and what powers we have to be able to act on that, but we'll certainly take that on notice. Thank you.
You've certainly got powers, I can tell you. But anyway, my next question is the Bruny Island Boat Club. As you are aware, with the erosion that occurred down there, council, I'm not sure if it was, no, the government put $80,000 in towards the reinstatement of the erosion, and council undertook the planning and management of that particular project. I understand that the job, and I'm only quoting what I'm told, I haven't been to the island and looked at it, but I'm told the rock size is too small, the whole thing is starting to collapse again. And it's only been done a few months ago.
Thank you. We don't have Mr.
Could council, my question is, could council give us a report, please, on the process of what took place there?
Yep, I was just about to say we don't have Mr. Reeve with us this evening, so yeah, he could provide some information. So we'll take that one on notice, if
and,
you don't mind.
And please note that I'm only going on hearsay.
Sure, that's okay. Thank you.
My last question is, again, and this again has been raised by many of my again, they're noting how many more planners are we losing? And again, I heard a lady tonight speak about enterprise bargaining and whatever we do, and we've constantly talked. Our previous mayor, when he was elected, swore black and blue that he was going to bring this to a head and find out why. I think in the last 12 months or 2 years, we've lost somewhere around about 20 planners. Is it because of the... my question here... Well, I'm not sure of the numbers, but I didn't research it, but I know there's quite a few. But my question is, hearing the lady tonight speak, is it because this council is not prepared to pay these people a proper wage? Because if they're not, all it's doing is jeopardising our ratepayers. Because we're not getting, and they're not getting the services. It's taking far, far too long to get an application through.
So
that's my question. My question is, are we underpaying, or is there a problem with management within that department?
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Oh, and Dr. Sturt, no? No.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Grace, the underlying issue in employing planners is that there is a nationwide shortage of them. The situation that Kingborough Council finds itself in is no different to any other council in Tasmania, in which it is a particular skill set where there is a shortage. And inevitably, when there's a shortage, there is a situation where there's this constant merry-go-round of either councils trying to recruit staff from other councils and the state government also recruiting staff from councils. So the staff that we have lost would be less than a handful over the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. And it's not due to our pay and conditions. It is due to the shortage, it's due to the workload that we have at the moment, and it's due to a preference to go and work either in private consultancy or for state government.
Well, following and just following, Mayor, I think it's time us as council or as a new as mayor, as the new mayor elected, that we workshop and look at the conditions and all the stuff surrounding how to get a planning approval, because I see many planning approvals come, and this is a question, I see many come through this table that don't even meet the criteria.
Sorry.
So my question is, why aren't they sent back and not dealt with? If they don't meet the requirements, the council staff have under their power to immediately refuse it. I think we're wasting too much time on petty things. But
Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. Our policy requires that a refusal comes to council. So unless you want to amend the policy, we are simply abiding by that. So any recommendation for a refusal comes to council.
Maybe we should look at it. I don't know the answer to that, okay. But I just raised it.
Okay. Is that the end of your... Do you have any further questions?
No, I don't think...
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, local residents have circulated a submission from TAS Fire Services regarding the Huntingfield DA. Was this a submission for the current subdivision application? Were staff aware of this information prior to the DA being submitted? Because the information in the TAS Fire submission is quite alarming and it would be good to know more information.
Ms Tyler Moore, I believe, can assist with that.
Through you, Mayor, the TAS Fire letter that's been circulated to all the councillors and I believe a number of members of the public, what did not form part of the planning application, were unaware of that letter before it was circulated to us by the one of the lead residents who have got concerns with the application. I've since spoken with TAS Fire Services. They were not aware that the public had the letter, and the letter seems, although not dated, is written at very early stages, so the letter references the whole estate. And as we've explained a number of times, this application isn't for the whole estate, it's not in the master plan, it's just a portion of the estate, that the comments that are contained in that aren't necessarily directly related to that part of the application, but it will need to be dealt with when the subdivision expands. It's also worth noting, under the planning scheme, there's only a few things that trigger the requirement for consideration of bushfire, and subdivision application types is one of those. But the planning scheme, as written by the state government, requires that you have a report from an accredited person. So that has been supplied by the applicant. There's no statutory requirement to refer it to TAS Fire Service. We, out of our own decision, have referred it to TAS Fire Service and a number of other agencies, because the planning scheme lacks any direction about that, to make them aware of the application and what's incurred in those documents. So TAS Fire Service has confirmed, no, it wasn't directly to do with this application. Yes, they had concerns about it. If you read the content of the email, it's probably, in my opinion, isn't as alarming as what's being portrayed. It's something that can be dealt with, and the applicants would certainly need to look at those matters of concern, and their practitioner should certainly have a look at the content of that TFS letter.
Thank you. A few more questions regarding Huntingfield. How lots will be sold? So how do we know if individual lots will be sold or on a lot-by-lot basis, or they'll be sold in blocks to developers?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we're unaware of how they sell them. It's not something that forms part of our decision-making, whether they sell them as individuals or as clusters or groups. That'll be up to the applicant.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
The government's publication release with the Huntingfield DA material, Huntingfield Design Guideline and consultation material looks very aspirational. What controls will be implemented to ensure that these design guidelines will be followed?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the applicant's submission includes, we did ask the question about how they thought those guidelines would be implemented, and their submission talks about potentially applying a covenant or a Part 5 agreement that would then tie those controls into those lots, which would then mean that every time a planning application comes in for those lots, we would have to do an assessment against that Part 5 agreement. We haven't yet decided whether we think that's appropriate or whether if there's a better mechanism to do that. It's not typically something we have. An example of one that we have that is similar is Kingston Green, which stipulates things such as you must have two-thirds of your wall rendered and you must have your porch this dimension and you must use this suite of colours. And that is very dated now, so it's something that we would need to be mindful of if we were to consider those design guidelines. Do we want to create another situation where we just have things that are too specific and will create later problems?
Thank
you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Are council staff aware if the government has any design policy regarding social housing?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not aware of those. They may very well exist. It doesn't form part of the planning scheme, so we have no regard of them if they do exist.
Thank you. And one more, Mayor. I note we have a meeting with Minister Ferguson on Wednesday. I'm just wondering what in particular that is about. Is it about Huntingfield or the City Deal projects? Or?
We haven't been advised.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions without notice from councillors? I just had one, and I note that Mr Reeve isn't with us this evening, so I'll just put it on notice. I just wanted to follow up the question on notice from Ms Lucas that's printed in the agenda paper about the traffic, the speed data for the Channel Highway near the Howden interchange. The response from Mr Reeve in the paper says that we could forward the query to DSG for consideration to get access to the traffic count information. I guess my question on notice is, can we please do that? So I will hopefully we can get that information. We turn now to questions on notice from councillors on page 3. The first question was about the disposal of Japanese sea stars at Beretta from Councillor Bastone, with an officer's response from Mr Reeve. The second question was about legal support for councillors from Councillor Grace, with an officer's response from Mr Jones. Moving to page 3, we have a notice of motion. Councillor Gladewright submitted a notice of motion headed Beach Road Crossing. So it's moved by Councillor Gladewright. Do I have a seconder for that?
Before you go I was hoping to withdraw that motion this evening, please.
Oh, certainly. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. The next motion on page 4 is also from Councillor Gladewright, a notice of motion headed 24-hour police station in Kingston. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright. Do I have a seconder and Councillor Midgley? Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. This motion is requesting that Council lobby the State Government for a 24-hour, 7-day-per-week police presence in Kingra. This is the second version of this motion after I've had lots of discussion with multiple people, including the chair of the safety committee. So I think what I really want to say here is just to acknowledge that Kingra is a safe municipality, and this motion isn't in response to necessarily a need that... it's more about recognising that Kingra is one of the fastest growing municipalities and that the police presence should be aligning with that growth. So I'm hoping that I'll get some support from other councillors. I also note that it's pretty open in terms of what that lobbying may be, and we'll put that over to our mayor to come up with best possible way of doing that, whether it's a letter or inviting the Minister for Police down to have a conversation, but we trust that our Mayor will come up with a a good way of doing that lobbying. So hopefully I can get some support from other councillors. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Grace and then Councillor Bastow. Councillor Grace.
Very, very, very good question. Very good question, because when I was chair of road safety, and I think at the time Councillor Reet was my deputy, we hammered this, not once, several times, about the policing. We've always been concerned. And it's not only when I was on road safety, it was one of my campaign parts that we needed 24-hour policing within our Kingborough municipality. We did get extra police shifted to Kingston, but I'm told because of the demand elsewhere, they've gradually shifted them on to somewhere else. So, yeah, I support your motion and good luck with it. No, I hope we do, because you're quite right. The people are screaming. I mean, I don't know how many times that I've gone out of meetings and other councillors, and we've heard people banging on the door over next door, hollering and screaming to get somebody to help them in stress, and all they get is a recording from Hobart. Now, I don't know what we do. We've got a new police minister. The mayor may invite her to a workshop one night, and we can ask her some of the questions that we've been raising.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just wondering if I could ask Councillor Glade-Wright whether you mean you want the police station manned 24 hours a day or police presence within Kingborough, because I think there's quite a difference in that. If we've got police presence going around in cars, then they're actually doing something. But if they're sitting in a police station waiting for something to happen, it seems to me that this is a waste of police power.
Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. I don't think I'm in a position to answer that, and really that would be up to the police to determine where they need to be. I'm just requesting police presence in Kingborough, and they will work out what they do with their time.
Councillor Bastone.
Well, it's a desire for a police station that is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I thought in the discussions I had with the police that in fact isn't what they wanted to do. They wanted to have a police presence within Kingborough, but not a staffed police station that took up, you know, a policeman's time. So I just wanted to get that clear before I decide how I'm going to vote.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have the utmost respect for Tasmania's emergency services. They do a power of work to keep us safe. Tasmania Police can ask the state government for more resources without our help. But, of course, if they do need our help, then let's consider it. No request has been made to me from Kingborough Council's own advisory body, the Kingborough Community Safety Committee, nor from the police. Let's at least have a workshop on this to look at the evidence before going down this path. We need an evidence-based approach to crime. What problem are we trying to solve? My understanding is that the police are there to deal with the symptoms of crime, whereas the underlying causes of crime require a more targeted tactic than simply having more police in offices or more police in patrol cars waiting and watching for more crime to happen. In real life, we need to use science to target specific investment in programs to combat the poverty, the alienation, the marginalisation and the lack of secure housing and access to education, employment and training that are the actual causes of crime. And of course, in this motion, I think it refers to, we need to ask, what kind of crime are we talking about? In this motion, as always in the media and in the dog-whistling world of politics, we are talking about neighbourhood crime, blue-collar crime, the type of crime which is sadly and occasionally archetyped and typified by underlying ageist and prejudicial stereotypes. It's that portrait of a young male in a hoodie from a certain part of town, perhaps of a certain ethnicity from a certain background, getting up to no good. Of course, this motion is aimed at that more than it is aimed at stopping the criminals who abuse people in our youth detention centres, or the people who send nations to war, or the crime of billionaire tax evasion, or the crime of selling weapons to nations engaged in human rights abuses on a vast scale. Of course. No, we're not talking about that kind of crime, are we? We're talking about, well, what is the type of crime that this motion is trying to address? Is this about domestic violence? If so, Why is the proposed lobbying not about funding domestic violence prevention services and facilities? Is this motion about drug and alcohol-related property damage and vandalism? If so, why isn't the lobbying asking for drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs in our community? Is this motion about people feeling unsafe on our streets? If so, why isn't the lobbying about asking for improvements to night lighting, CCTV or passive surveillance? Is this motion about speeding or hooning? If so, why isn't the lobbying asking for traffic calming measures? Is it about young people out late at night? If so, why aren't we asking for diversionary programs or employment and training opportunities? Is this about having more police available to direct traffic in case of road accidents or natural disasters? If so, why isn't the lobbying asking for more funds for the SES or paramedics or firefighters? Is this motion about wage theft, worker exploitation, tax evasion, corruption or white-collar crime such as criminogenic and predatory financial crime that takes place in our midst? I didn't think so. I think police are asked to do far too much. When you overstay a parking meter on a Hobart street, the parking officer who gives you an infringement notice does not carry a taser and a gun. That's unnecessary. And so too, I think, if you're caught speeding in your car, I don't think the person giving you the speeding ticket should have a taser and a gun. If we need somebody to de-escalate a situation with somebody facing an acute mental health crisis, I don't think the first responder should be carrying a taser and a gun. If there's a noise complaint because teenagers are having a party and it's disturbing the neighbours, I don't think the responder needs to have a taser and a gun. In our society...
Councillor Cordova, I'm going to call you to relevance. We're actually not discussing that Tasmania Police carry tasers and guns. Could I direct you to the substance of the notice of motion submitted by Councillor Gladewright in relation to the staffing 24 hours of police? But let's not stray too far from that topic, please.
Thank you, Mayor. In this society and in Kingborough, we're asking our police to our mental health interventionists, to be our teacher for difficult students, our traffic monitor and our investigator, and I'm saying that's too much. The 24-hour police presence won't deal with any of the underlying issues that we're trying to get police to deal with. And the proof is in the rates of incarceration, that we incarcerate three times more here in Tasmania than in Norway, and that's not because there's something in the drinking water that makes people in Kingborough more likely to commit a crime worthy of a custodial sentence. It's about our attitude towards policing and our attitude towards crime. And by putting on more police for more hours, that is not going to address the underlying causes of crime which people are so anxious about. And without seeing any clear crime-based statistics saying this type of crime is going on in Kingborough in this area at this time, so we need more police here, I think that this motion will be viewed by the public as nothing more than a cynical and half-baked attempt to politicise public safety by playing on people's generalised anxiety. More police does not always equal less crime. There are many suburbs with far higher rates of crime which have far higher presence of police. Meanwhile, there are plenty of areas in Tasmania that have almost no police presence but very low rates of crime, because solving crime is not as simple as increasing police presence. In fact, over-policing can lead to whole communities being marginalised, stigmatised and disenfranchised. When people in vulnerable circumstances see police more often than they see social workers, the whole community suffers. When marginalised people get fines for misdemeanours more often than they get support and targeted services, the whole community suffers. And when people get exposed to the criminal justice system from a young age because there are too many police patrolling their neighbourhood, asking them what they're doing out so late or who they're talking to or what they're up to, nobody is made safer. If there is a problem for us to fix... Can I have 3 more minutes, please? Or 30 seconds?
No.
As a white male in society, I know my privilege. I know that my relationship with the police is comfortable and positive. And more police for more hours in my neighbourhood won't affect me negatively, but for some First Nations peoples, people of certain religious minorities, for young people or people living in poverty or experiencing homelessness, I'm sad to say that the relationship with police is not always so constructive. If there's a problem to fix, let's fix it. But show us the evidence, tell us what the problem is, and let's put our heads together to solve it. But if this is just about profiling certain neighbourhoods in our community or a knee-jerk response to generalised anxiety and perception that is not grounded in need or fact, as mentioned by the Mayor earlier, then I think this is a very inefficient, ineffective and potentially harmful proposal. I'll be voting against.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Wass and then Councillor Fox.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'd just like to advise that I do support this recommendation and I will be voting for it. And some of the reasons Councillor Cordova covered. But most important, the most important reason why I'm going to support it is in the community, this is what the community is saying. Not an expert like Councillor Cordova. The people that matter, the people that we're here to represent, they're the ones that matter, they're the ones that are asking for this. And I think by Council showing an interest and referring that to where it should go, be it to the Minister, be it to the Department, it gives an opportunity for a review to be carried out. You've got to remember that those police officers attending at Kingborough are also looking after the southern region in total. Now, are there issues in Dover? Are there issues in Huonville? Because if there is a first call out for Huonville, then that could take away the officer from here. And what happens to the officer call out to Bruny Island? Again, a review, and this could necessitate a review will be determined by, and the inspector will then have an opportunity to state his or her case, and it will also give the minister an opportunity to have some input, and most importantly, to come back with a decision that would be best placed for our community. So I suggest to you that the recommendation should be approved.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I know that Kingborough has got a very low crime rate compared to other municipalities, and I think when the safety committee looked at this issue recently and the new police were put on, it was made clear to them that the state has limited resources and that Kingborough actually has their fair share of resources from the police right now, and that we almost have a 24-hour presence now. And during the times, the very small time in the middle of the night that we don't, the southern outlet is very accessible and police can get to Kingborough and further regions very quickly at very short notice, and the Hobart police will cover this area. So I understand the concerns in the community, but perhaps if they realise how well serviced we are and that that is made more public, that they won't be expressing those concerns. I don't support the motion. I think the current situation is acceptable, and I think the safety committee has agreed to that, and unless it went to the committee and they came up with a recommendation, I wouldn't want to override that committee. And I would like to stay with the status quo. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova, and other councillors who have shared. I think Councillor Cordova has definitely raised some significant points in regards to crime prevention, the lack of funds perhaps in those areas, a lack of funds in regards to domestic violence awareness and things like that. We definitely need to step up a lot more in those spaces. But I also like what Councillor Walsh said in regards to the fact that the community is saying loud and clear that this is something that's really important to them. I wasn't on the last by-election campaign, but we have a fresh councillor here who spoke to a lot of residents, and there's a lot of talk on social media in regards to this discussion. So as a new councillor, Councillor Glaidwright is bringing this to council, has had discussions with the safety committee chair, and they were happy to look at this motion coming to council as well. And I guess in regards to some points that some of councillors have made, we don't know if someone is escaping domestic violence in the middle of the night. There's no statistics in regards to that. And sometimes in those situations, people don't have a safe place to go to, but they think to go to their local police station and knock on the door. We don't know how many knocks on those doors aren't answered. So does that prevent people from going? So I think it's worthy to consider the lobbying statement in here, and as we know, as Councillor Glaidwright said, that lobbying statement is very broad. It could be a meeting with TAS Police. It could be some other discussions that could come to Council, but we've got to take these steps and move forward with this, and I thank Councillor Glaidwright for bringing this forward. I'm happy to support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Before I ask Councillor Glaidwright to sum up, I just wanted to make a brief contribution. I thank Councillor Glaidwright for bringing the motion tonight. It was certainly very true during the recent by-election that this was a top of mind issues for many, many people in the community, and I believe that that is probably because of the proximity to where it was compared to the state election. Those state issues were still very much on people's minds, but you only need to look at the contributions on Facebook where people want to see a 24-hour police station because they don't believe the response times are adequate, particularly in the wee hours of the morning when there isn't coverage. We did have which was quite welcome, as I indicated earlier, an increase in the staff at the Kingston Police Station a number of years ago. That has remained. I'm not talking about the station being understaffed, and I don't believe Councillor Gladewright is either, but the intent of this motion is so that there is a 24-hour presence there and within our community so that in the event of something occurring that the community can be assured that there will be a prompt response to it. And I take on board what Councillor Cordova said about, not necessarily us as a council, but the state government and federal governments don't do a lot in terms of looking at the causation issues and how we can actually reduce some of the incidences of crime by having intervention programs and positive programs. But in this case, and I certainly don't detract from what he's saying, but in this case, I believe that we do need to listen to the community. There were particularly elderly people in the community that expressed to me that they wanted to see more police here, that they felt, if there was an intruder in their house in the middle of the night, that they wanted to know that there was a 24-hour police station. Mm. So I thank Councillor Gladewright for bringing the bringing the notice of motion. I will be supporting it, and I assure you I will try and come up with, if it passes, I will try and come up with innovative lobbying approaches and welcome suggestions on those. So, Councillor Gladewright, would you like to summarise?
Can I just ask a question, if you may?
Yes, certainly.
A comment I think Councillor Fox made, and the fact is we haven't... the statistics I have is that the crime rate, particularly down in our area, Margate and Snug, which is tripled, I guess, in the last few years. There are problems with teenagers and so forth. So we haven't got those statistics in front of us, of course. So I agree with you, Mayor, that this needs to be, and Councillor Cordova, I think we need
Is there a question?
Well, the question
what
is...
What are the crime statistics?
Yeah, the crime statistics, and how long does it take? Because I know it took an hour and a half at Snug just 3-4 weeks ago with a stolen car.
Thank you. Well, we obviously don't have the statistics before us, but perhaps that's something that we could ask the Safety Committee to look at next time they meet. Councillor Gray...
I say too that the police do a good job, and I'm not criticising them for one
minute. Thank you, Councillor Grace. I think we all express that sentiment, even if we did, or believe that sentiment, even if we didn't express it. So thank you for pointing that out. Councillor Midgley, did you have a question?
I have a question. I thought the crime statistics were published as part of the Safety Committee. I'm sure I've seen that little table with crime statistics in there.
Yes, they are as part of the minutes. Yes. But we don't, I guess the question is, we don't have them before us at the moment. Yep. Councillor Gladewright, would you like to sum up?
Thank you. I can assure everyone that I have had lengthy discussion with the Chair of the Safety Committee, and yes, it's quite right. We have very low crime rate in Kingborough, which is wonderful. This notice of motion is more looking at the fact that we're a growing community and that it's reasonable to expect that the police presence keeps up with that growth.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. I'll now put the motion. The recommendation is that the Council lobby the State Government for a 24-hour, 7-day-per-week police presence in Kingborough. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? A show of hands, please. All those in favour? In favour are Councillors Grace, Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Street and Reet. Against, Councillors Cordova, Fox and Bastone. The motion is carried. Moving now to page 5. I had submitted a notice of motion in relation to workshops. However, obviously, as I'm in the chair, I can't move that, and we don't have the Deputy Mayor here this evening, so I've asked Councillor Street if he would move that on my behalf, and then I would like to second the motion. Councillor Street, you'd like to move it? Yes, and I'd like to second it. Councillor Street.
Mayor, I would point of order on this because I don't believe you can. I think you would need to move anyone to take your place.
Thank you. I did seek advice on that, Councillor Wass, and I am allowed to second a motion from the Chair, but I'm not allowed to move a motion from the Chair. Thank you.
But I don't believe you can appoint someone else to move the motion. You've got to move it, and if you don't move it, it doesn't go anywhere.
All right, well, I'll put the question differently then. Would anybody like to move the motion that is in my name?
Yes.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I would like to second the motion, so it is Councillor Street, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The motion which you have submitted and I've gladly moved is that Council's workshop policy be amended to include an agreed set of guidelines to assist in the smooth running of workshops and that a report on this matter be provided to Council within 4 weeks. Mayor, workshops are an important part of the work that councillors do and often misunderstood, I think, by many and probably not well explained to us by the public either, in that workshops are our opportunity which we rarely get or which we rarely get outside of those workshop opportunities for us as councillors to sit around the table and have in-depth policy discussions on matters that are important to the community before then coming and having those debates in open council. It's an opportunity for us to thrash out matters that we may not otherwise get the opportunity to thrash out before then having those arguments again in public. It's an opportunity for us to take advice from staff as well and also to meet with other stakeholders. Importantly, up till now, it's been my view, at least, and I know, given that you've provided the motion to Council, it's your view as well, Mayor, that perhaps those workshops haven't been going as smoothly as they otherwise could be. And there hasn't always been the opportunity for all councillors to contribute on an equal basis. I'm very glad to be moving this motion so that hopefully we can get some guidelines in place that allow for that to occur, allow all councillors to contribute appropriately at those workshops, and hopefully get a lot more out of them for the councillors that are involved and for staff and stakeholders that might be asked from time to time to attend them. So this is a bit of an internal process matter for Council, but nonetheless I'm glad that we're having the discussion and glad that hopefully after this is concluded we should have an appropriate set of guidelines that assist us with running those workshops.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Grace.
Obviously I disagree. Look, 20 years I've gone to I don't know how many workshops and I felt that workshops are closed. They're like a closed session part of council. They give the councillors an opportunity to ask questions that you can't do so in an open council meeting. As far as time-wise, and I think I'm the target of this, to be quite frank, because I do ask questions, and particularly I do ask questions when we're talking about a $2-3 million project, and we're supposed to not be making decisions in workshop, and yet we do, in my opinion. I believe we're well covered as our present meeting procedures, because now are we going to be told, oh, you can't ask that question, or you can have one question for 2 minutes, see you later. This is just gagging. It's not being open and transparent. In fact, it's reverse. I won't be supporting this because I think it's the most ridiculous thing I've seen come to the table for some time, because the public expect us, their expectation of us is to ask questions. When we go to a workshop and we're talking about issues, they expect us to ask the hard questions, and that's why we have workshops, because we can speak to our staff in different manners than what we do in an open council session. I won't support this.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Bastone.
I tend to agree with Councillor Grace. I worry about the fact that more and more of our life is getting regulated anyway, and it's the wording worries me. The guidelines will include the timing and format of the workshops and the procedures for making contributions. Now, sometimes we're very passionate about particular things, and if we have to have everybody get a say, or what worries me is that this is too broad. I would be happy if we, sounds awful, if we had a workshop on workshops, which is a bit silly, but I couldn't support this as it is. I think they 99.9% of the time work very well, and they're well run by the chair. And I think that this is unnecessary most of the time. So I won't support it.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Really interesting notion, and I thank you, Mayor, for bringing this to the table. I think it's a worthy discussion to have. I would like to echo that sentiment that I think was articulated very well by Councillor Bastone just there, and also I guess it's reflected in the statements that were made by Councillor Grace, that I think the risk, as Councillor Grace has raised, that if we go for a more rigid and formalised set of guidelines, that could risk constraining the open and flowing nature of the debate when we're tackling really important issues of public importance. So the timing and the format, as Councillor Bastone mentioned, I think on that I would just say that the type of conversation that one needs to have changes workshop to workshop based on who we're talking to. So a metro workshop is going to be very different from a workshop with a minister, which is very different from a meeting about risk management. And the types of conversations that you need to have can't really be regimented and formalised. And I will obviously, if this motion passes, I'll wait to see what that report says within the 4 weeks. But my concern is that because of the broad and diverse nature of the workshops that we have, some of them lend themselves to that rigid format where we each get a couple of minutes to ask our questions, and others of them are much more free-flowing where we do, you know, kind of group work and brainstorming, and that conversation inherently has to be more informal. So I think I'll wait to hear what other councillors think of this, but at the moment I'm erring towards the idea that actually the purpose of the workshops is to be that informal discussion, and I think it's a credit to the chair that it's so well run usually, and it really is, I think, a matter to be crafted by the chair relevant to each and every individual workshop, because the range of the topics of the workshops are so different, and that therefore the format needs to have that degree of flexibility. So at the moment I'm erring towards no, but I'd be interested to hearing what others say. Thank you.
Are there any further speakers? Councillor Midgley. Oh.
Thank you, Mayor. There's been lots of thoughts pondering as people have been sharing, and I guess it would be really good to hear the thoughts regarding Mayor putting this motion forward, and what you would like to, what your vision is for this, and the purpose of it is, and why you put this forward in the first place. That would be great to understand that before I say anything more.
I will when I get to make my contribution, but I'm conscious of the fact that I'm not the mover of the motion, so I can't offer you any advice right now, but I will certainly make my, I was going to wait until everybody had spoken before I made my contribution.
Okay, oh, no worries. I'd like to hear. Anyway, so I hear the sentiments of Councillor Bastone and Councillor Cordova and Councillor Grace. I can hear that, and I think, you know, if we look at our the roles of a group and how a group comes together, and the norming, the forming, and the all those sort of, you know, stages that kind of a group that comes together, and when a group comes together, they you know, look at the guidelines or how they're going to operate. So in an essence, this kind of is like a sense of a group coming together and some guidelines of how as a group we are going to operate and proceed to make sure that we have well functioning, that everybody is heard, that everybody gets to have a say, and that the process, and we also have a time. And that's one of the difficult things about the council workshops is I often have a lot of questions, but I'm also aware of the time. But I know that we can follow up afterwards if we need to. So I guess in regards to that, there is a sort of an essence that we need to have some structure, guidelines, policy in place so that everyone does get to have a say. We are constrained by time and we need a structure in place. Even most meetings we have, committee meetings and whatever, there is structures in place, not necessarily a policy, but there's sort of some norm sort of structures in place. And I feel like the Mayor is heading towards having that structure. So I am interested in hearing from the Mayor in regards to what that vision is before I actually make a decision as to whether I support it or not. And I'm sure with that there would be some flexibility in the workshops. I don't think that's going to be a very hard line of, oh, you're not following the policy 5.1, but it does provide some structure and guidelines as to how we will proceed.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I note that as Chair it's difficult to manage workshops because we don't have standing orders and it's not a decision-making process that we're in or forum. And I think the bottom line is really mutual respect, and that is something that is difficult to have a guideline on or to dictate, basically. I'd be very interested to hear about the Mayor's concerns, because I think that's really the basis of this motion. I agree with other speakers to say we should avoid rigidity, but at the same time I think it is important that we all take turns, not only to speak but also to listen, as we do around the table at a normal council meeting. But workshops have caused problems in the past, and also not only about who speaks the most, but also issues of basically being asked to make an informal decision, and which then future reports are based on, which I have always found very confronting. Maybe that should also be addressed in a report that were to come to council on the matter. They're probably the big issues for me. But I would look forward to Councillor Reid's contribution. Thank you.
Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. Who would be writing this report?
Mr Smee would be.
Okay, great. I think...
That's what he said too.
Look, I support this motion. I think this motion is seeking to address efficiency. And so where it says this will ensure that all councillors have an equal opportunity to participate in proceedings and ensure that time made available for workshops is used in the most effective way, I definitely support that statement.
Thank you. Councillor Gladright. Councillor Cordova?
Just a question. I assume that when the report comes back... Is it the case that when the report comes back before council that we'll have... that there'll be some deliberative process, almost like a workshop on workshops, in order to hash out some of these questions that we're raising, but as of this debate are going unanswered? Will we have the opportunity to maybe fix and tweak that first report after it comes back, then get another go to say, well, actually, we like this, we don't like that, let's alter and edit and improve it? Will that opportunity be available?
We can try. We can have a workshop on the workshop, if that's what you're asking. Happy to have a workshop on the workshop.
Just
if there are no further...
Just a question.
Question, Councillor Grace, yep.
I heard you correctly. I think Mayor said that you will be writing the report.
No, I said Mr Smee would be writing the report.
Sorry, it sounded as though you said You
no,
would
no,
be writing
no,
the report.
No, no, Mr. Smee, not me. I know that rhymes. For my contribution, look, the reason that I brought this notice of motion is that was to have a framework which would allow our workshops to proceed in an orderly fashion while still ensuring that everybody has an equitable opportunity to take part. And I don't want it to be a rigid process. I think it does need to sort of ebb and flow depending on the sort of workshop we're having. For example, the risk management workshop that we had last week, obviously that was, as it was being facilitated by an external consultant, that was a totally different situation than, say, a workshop where we have a policy matter presented to us and then we ask questions, or that differs again from how it might run if we have some external parties who come and present to us on matters, or even if we have somebody who's joining us via video conferencing, that's different again. So I think there needs to be flexibility in it. But the question was raised recently about not having adequate opportunity to ask all the questions at a workshop, and I just wanted to ensure that we have some sort of framework where everybody gets the opportunity to ask those questions, having regard for the fact that we only do have an hour and a half that we make ourselves available for workshops. We have at times extended that, but I know that people have other commitments, and that because we do meet every Monday night, either for a council meeting or a workshop, that people are keen to get to other commitments like Rotary or family commitments or other community commitments. So we do endeavour to get out at 7 o'clock. So we have an hour and a half of workshop. I would just like us to have a framework that enables us to use that time effectively, to make sure, I think it was Councillor Fox mentioned, that we you know, have some respect in the way that we communicate with each other. This is not dissimilar to what the Clarence City Council, they have a set of guidelines that they operate their workshops under, and I've looked at those and they are quite reasonable. They don't stifle debate, they don't hinder the opportunity for people to ask questions, and so I believe in interests of good governance that it would be well placed for us to do likewise. And at the heart of it is that the meeting procedures regulations do not apply to council workshops, and I think in the interests of ensuring that there is a way that the workshops can progress in an orderly manner, I think it's appropriate that we do this. So all this notice of motion is asking at this stage is for a report to be provided. We're not locking us into having something, but we would like to see perhaps some draft guidelines for everyone to have a look at. If we can workshop that, then certainly we will, although we have a fairly full workshop program at the moment. So this is... Please don't take this as anybody feeling that they are being targeted individually or that I'm trying to run it in a very militant manner, but I just want to make sure that we have an opportunity for everyone to ask those questions. You know, it may mean slightly, you know, having some time frames around so that you can ask, you know, if you should be able to ask a question in, you know, a minute, not five, because otherwise it's a statement, but, you know, we can work within that in a framework. So, Councillor Bastone, did you have a question?
I do have a question. It's in the wording, and I'm not sure if I can ask it to you. That's my worry, or whether I have to ask it to Councillor Street, who might not be able to answer me. The Council's workshop policy be amended to include an agreed set of guidelines.
Yes.
So, not to look at what might be proposed. That it is, if we vote for this, they will be amended. Is that right?
I can answer that, can't I? Or would you like to answer it, Mr. Smee, from a governance perspective?
Thank you, Mayor. So the intent is to prepare a set of guidelines that would then be referenced by our policy. included as part of our policy. So in effect, yes, the existing workshop policy would be amended to include those guidelines.
Right, but the agreed set of guidelines, we don't know what they are yet.
That's what
trying to find out. So we then, after Mr. Smee writes it, we still then have the opportunity to reject it totally?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Guaranteed?
Yes. Councillor Street, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I couldn't do a better job than what you had done yourself, except to say this and assure my colleagues that I would never vote for any amendment to this policy which would stifle the discussion around the table. That is absolutely not my intention in moving the motion. My absolute intention in moving the motion is actually the exact opposite, which is ensuring that everybody has the same opportunity to contribute around the table going forward, and perhaps make life a little easier for the Chair in running those workshops so that when we do have some issues, there is some structure to refer back to. But I would never vote for an amendment to this policy which stifled the debate around the table. So be assured of that.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Street, seconded by myself, Councillor Reid. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Moving now to petitions still being actioned on page 4. There are no petitions still being actioned. Also on page 4, petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Page 5, under officers' reports to council, we have a matter, the public interest disclosures policy and procedures, with a recommendation on page 8. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that motion? And for the purposes of the tape, Councillor Grace left the room at 6:41 p.m. A mover? Sorry, Councillor Cordova, seconded, and Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. We're looking here at the public interest disclosures policy and procedures in line with updated procedures issued by the Ombudsman. And essentially, I think taking the report as read, these policies and procedures relating to public interest disclosures are very important and very timely. The more that we can enshrine protections in policies and procedures for disclosures that relate to the public interest, the more that we will enhance transparency, the more that we will enhance accountability, and the more that people will feel protected to be able to make the important public interest disclosures that they might come across in their duties. The policies appear very comprehensive. I had a couple of questions that I was hoping perhaps the author of the report might be able to answer. My first question relates to, if my reading of section 5 on page 20 is correct, is that disclosures can be made to council by current staff, whereas former staff and members of the public and anonymous persons are required to make disclosures to the Ombudsman rather than to the council. My question is, does this mean that the support afforded by section 14 on page 36, which is things like support for the discloser, keeping the discloser informed, is it true that that is only given to current staff, whereas members of the public, anonymous persons and former staff would not be afforded those same supports?
Mr. Malt, would you like to answer that?
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is that that would be reference to the Ombudsman to undertake that level of care, but I probably would have to take that on notice because it predominantly deals, in my understanding, with disclosures that are made to council for current staff. But certainly where it does apply outside that process, I believe that's undertaken by the Ombudsman.
And thank you so much. Is it possible, through you, Mayor, to get a bit of a background or a history of what the more significant changes were that have been made by the Ombudsman that precipitated this update?
Mr. Mould.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, on the in the report on page 7, 4.2 outlines the major changes. And they are really to do with differentiating between grievances through mixed disclosures and actual disclosures. So that's to help the public officer to make that determination. The requirement to undertake risk assessments and to use checklists, and that's to assist the ombudsman who has to review these to make sure that processes have been undertaken properly and that an investigation which has been undertaken by the Public Interest Disclosures Officer can be reported to the principal officer and all that evidence is placed down before them to make a decision on the outcome of that report. The simplification of the policy is also intended to make it easier to understand as well, and also the inclusion of those appendix is included for the process to be simplified for the assessment as well. They didn't exist in the previous policy.
Thank you. And it says in the discussion section in section 4 that the one of the key reasons for this changes to the model procedures is in response to a Griffith University report into whistleblowing called Whistling While They Work 2. And full disclosure here, I haven't read Whistling While They Work 2. But I wanted to know, in the interests of public disclosure and transparency, I wanted to ask, did that Whistling While They Work 2 report illuminate a large number of gaps that Kingborough Council currently has? And secondly, if it did illuminate lots of gaps that Kingborough Council has, historically, has Kingborough Council utilised this kind of policy a lot before?
Mr. Malt.
Through you, Mayor. No, it wasn't specifically targeted at Kingborough Council. It was to Tasmanian public bodies in general. And those changes specifically were put in place to address those shortcomings. It previously, this is two iterations ago, felt that it was incumbent on the person making the disclosure to be aware of the Act, and that's totally impractical. So what this does is reinforces the process as part of a complaints management framework, if you like, so that disclosures can be identified by the body that the disclosure is being made to, and that body assist the person to undertake this process should it be deemed to be a disclosure. Otherwise, people are probably unaware that that's the case.
Thank you. And so finally, Mayor, just to say that the Council's public interest disclosure policy and procedures require revision as a result of amendments to the model procedures made by the Ombudsman. The Ombudsman has approved Council's modified public interest disclosure procedures, and they're submitted now to Council for adoption. And as we've just heard, basically this is an addition to our complaints management framework, and I think it is a welcome one at that. So I thank the author and the authoriser, and I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a point. We have a spelling mistake in 7.1, which does slightly change the meaning. So I think it should be handling process, not handing process. I feel like
page,
you used to do before. Sorry. Page 7, 7.1, information relating to the Act and how officers and contractors can make disclosures is included in Council's induction and complaints handling processes, not handing processes. Sorry.
Thank you, Councillor Bastow. It's good to know that apart from me, somebody else finds typos. Are there any further contributions? If not, I will. Councillor Cordova, do you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion as moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Street, that Council adopt the public interest disclosure policy and procedures, policy 1.4. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to the review of policy 5.9, the significant tree register, with a recommendation on page 56. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? I need a mover for the motion. Oh. Councillor Midgley, yes, do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
Everybody wants to second it. Thank you, Mayor. So this was discussed at the last council meeting by you, Mayor, in regards to a review of this policy, and I thank council staff for the swift turnaround of the significant tree register policy. It is very important and timely. We understand that the hold-up was in regards to the bylaw. There's significant information contained in the report. It provides another layer of protection for the important habitat that we do have in Kingborough, and noting as well the track changes. There was too many track changes, so we don't see those currently in the updated policy. I have a few questions, Mayor, and some of those... I guess some of the comments from community members in regards to this is in regards to the process, and the fact that the process is quite an impact on staff, and we know that the staff resources, perhaps they've got a lot on. So how can we be assured that with this updating of this policy that there will be staff resources dedicated to actually making things happen rather than the registration process taking time or perhaps not being followed up and things like that.
Dr. Stevenson, would you like to comment?
Yes, and I'll invite Ms. Tyler Moore to correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's important to understand that regardless of how much resources you throw at it, this is not something where you can get an application, assess it and make an amendment. We have to sort of cluster the work together because of the work that's involved in a planning scheme amendment, which is a critical part now that this new policy is trying to address. There are two key changes that are specifically designed to address some of the resourcing issues. One is getting rid of a permanent panel and being have more flexibility in who can make the assessments. The second is reducing the double up of processes that happened because we had changes to the planning system against our old policy. So we were essentially having to do some parts twice. Now, in an environment where we've got massive DAs coming in, it's always going to be an issue, but those things definitely will have an impact. Having said that, you need a critical volume, really, to make it worthwhile investing the resources into the planning scheme amendment side of things. So you need a minimum number before you would do that, what is quite an intensive piece of work.
Thank you. I guess that leads to my next question around actually promoting this to the public. And I understand we do promote it through social media and through different ways, and I don't, from my recollection, we don't get a significant, like a high number of people actually responding to this. How can we change that? Or, this has been a pretty crazy question coming from me, of course we want people to, nominate more trees. How are we going to step up in that space to actually make this aware to the public, to note that this is a really important policy that they can and should be aware of, and that they can actually nominate?
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I did ask that question myself, and you'll notice that one of the changes in the new iteration of the policy that we have before us tonight is to make it a process that is open all year round rather than calling for nominations at a particular time during the year. So anybody can nominate a tree for listing or even delisting at any time, and the intention is then through our media and communications officer is to have an annual focus particularly on reminding people that it's there and educating them what the significant tree register is about, and that we do have a change and that it will be open all year round rather than just a particular period of time.
Thank you. And I just had a thought on that comment.
Excellent.
So with the Kingborough Community Forum, I know Councillor Westwood initiated a bit of a, thing that they can sort of put ideas towards. Perhaps maybe on that, if it is relevant, there could be a significant tree register, just to keep that reminding to the Kingborough Community Forum, because it's often that we know about things but it takes that time to act. So maybe if it's prompted through that, just as an idea.
Thank you. That sounds like a good idea, and I'm sure that Dr. Stevenson has noted that down. She's nodding vigorously and writing notes.
Thank you. And a couple of other questions. So I'm just wanting to understand the public consultation and alignment to LUPA. I know that's mentioned in the report, just if I can have some more clarification and understanding of that, please. Yeah.
Ms. Tullamore, would you like to fill us in on that, please?
Through you, Mayor, the advertising requirements are stipulated in the Act about what you do for a planning scheme amendment, so that's whether it's a significant tree update or whether you're changing your policy about apartments. It's still the same. The report does include the methods that occurs on page 55 of the report. So it's we notify the owners and occupiers. There's a site notice. We put an advertisement in the Mercury, and we have all the documents available on the website as well as in the council office. So the requirements, the advertising period is 28 days for people to respond. So people may respond, obviously, that they support or don't support it, and we would hope they would have some justifications and reasons as to why they've taken the position they have. We would consider that, and then we need to bring Section 32 report back to the council meeting, so you'd be familiar with that. For other planning scheme amendments, we would go to advertising, and then we come back and tell the councillors, this is what they said, this is our opinion, and we may suggest, or we suggest you change something, or we suggest make no change, just note the comments.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And just one further comment. So I guess I'd really like to be assured that we don't have any reputational risk in regards to nominations being sort of sitting there, that they are acted upon in a timely manner, and I guess being assured that this new policy, considers that it is a good process and that it can be proceeded and processed in a timely manner. Can I be assured that that will happen?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It depends on what you mean by timely. As I said, it's not something that we would be able to deal with on suddenly we get a nomination and next month it's in the planning scheme. It takes longer than that, but certainly the policy addresses correspondence to acknowledge the receipt of the nomination process. We're looking at updating our web content to be able to say these trees have been nominated and these ones have been listed. So a lot of it is improving the level of information we put out, and that includes also in the education campaign also being very clear about what is a significant tree. This is not a tool to protect every tree in Kingborough, and it's different than the bylaw, and it's, that will be coming back to council. It is really about significant trees. So, and part of the education will be making clear so that people have realistic expectations.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a worry if we're encouraging people to nominate significant trees. It's going to cost us $330 per tree, which is payable to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. This is on top of the amount of time it will take for our staff to decide if they are a significant tree. And I can see this being a very large budget item for the first year or so. After that, I think it would probably calm down a bit. But we don't, to my knowledge, have anything in the budget to pay for this at the moment. And my other question is, we have a significant tree in Margate, an oak tree, which is marked, which has been severely pruned on one side by Aurora to the point of view it's no longer a proper shaped tree or anything. So what right do we have to stop someone like Aurora cutting down our trees that we've put on the significant tree register?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the first comment was about the fees that are payable. It's not $330 per tree. It's planning scheme amendment for any amendment that we ever do is $330, so it'd just be for each time that we do it. Obviously that fee may change if the Planning Commission changes their fees, but as the Director of Environment pointed out, the we would hope we would do a cluster of trees, not a cluster, a group of separate nominations together for that. The second question about Aurora, they have exemptions to do works if it's for protection of assets, so it is difficult to avoid those tree cuttings. It's something that perhaps it's a relationship to work with them about nominating and asking. I'm not sure. I think City of Hobart might have approached the matter with them, but often they're contractors that are used for Aurora as well, but perhaps that's something we need to look at if we've got significant trees.
Next I had Councillor Fox and then Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you. I've just got a few questions of Ms Tyler Moore. Is this to cover native trees, or does it also cover things like poplars and other introduced species that might have significant heritage value?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it includes native and non-native tree species.
Thank you. And the other concern I have on page 57, it says they need to be 5 metres or more, where there are often large she-oak stands in coastal areas which are significant and are important, but they wouldn't reach 5 metres. Would they be protected? And also manuka stands and salt marshes and wetlands.
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm just looking for the point about the 5 metres or more. As this is just the policy, we would have some flexibility in it to if we thought something was particularly significant, but it is more geared around trees as opposed to the salt marshes and the like. That is something that may need to be protected or considered its significance in other ways, and they may be afforded protection under other legislation.
And she oaks would not be covered?
Through you, Mayor, the she-oaks was the question that the she-oaks don't reach 5 metres. Like I said, there would be some flexibility if there we thought that there was some significance, but it really is to do with the significant tree. So something has to be really unique about the tree to make a listing. It's not necessarily just its environmental offering to the local flora fauna of the area.
Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you. I'd like to note that there are a lot of community members who have significant concerns about the safety of big trees, and I note in the existing policy at 5.18 talks about in situations where an immediate risk to public safety from the tree is demonstrated, council approval, blah, 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 get to the end, and a decision will be determined within one business day. That's been taken out of the new proposed policy, and it just says in situations where an immediate risk to public safety from a significant tree is identified, council approval must still be obtained, and it doesn't have any time frames. I was just wondering, does that need to be looked at again, do you think, if there is a significant immediate risk, should there be a time frame put in there, or how are we going to reassure the community that we will address it?
Dr. Stevenson.
The reason we took the time frame out is whether it's an immediate safety risk varies in the eye of the beholder. So we would always do an initial assessment if we had a complaint through, as we would for any other matter raised. You know, sometimes it's going to need an arborist report, or sometimes it clearly just isn't a significant safety risk, it's just a perception. So we thought rather than be prescriptive, we still address the fact that if it's an unacceptable safety risk, it can be dealt with, but we didn't want to lock down the policy as rigidly as it had been previously.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any... Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very important policy, but I feel at the moment that it's not... because the process is still so cumbersome, I'm concerned that it actually doesn't go far enough to protect what we want to protect, which is trees that have aesthetic significance, important size, height, circumference, canopy, trees of significant age, trees of significant landscape value or historical significance or rarity of species or unusual physical features. Am I correct in that the one major change is that now you can nominate a tree all year round, and even though they will be submitted to the Planning Commission on an annual basis, you can still nominate all year round, and that's a change. Is that correct?
Dr. Stevenson.
Oh, there we go. Through you, Mayor. Actually, it's always been open for nominations all year round, but we just did an annual call. So it's really just changing the focus to make it have a broader understanding. So it's currently on the website, you can nominate at any time of the year. Just in relation to your point about is it too restrictive, I mean, the planning system rules are not ours, as you know. The report does reference the fact that we've taken out references to the bylaw in this amended policy, but when the bylaw's being drafted to come back for consideration, we can contemplate the scenarios of having something that's been nominated but is not yet formalised as a significant tree and somehow capture some protections in the bylaw that way. So that will be part of the next stage of work. So rather, because we can't, there is no bylaw at the moment, but we think we can, this policy will work regardless, depending on how the bylaw is framed. But yeah, it's never going to be a big, it's not designed, and the planning system is not designed to do mass nominations.
Thank you for that answer. That's very helpful. And Mayor, I'll just make the point that I'm concerned that we, and I raised this earlier, that we're potentially putting the cart before the horse in terms of a piecemeal approach where we're looking at the significant tree register now and then we're going to look at the bylaw, but actually all of this needs to fall within the framework of a street tree strategy, and Hobart City Council has a very comprehensive street tree strategy which includes all of their policies and procedures fall underneath that framework. I'm comforted by the fact that at 5.12 it says trees nominated for listing should not be removed or lopped until the listing is determined. I think that's critically important, that we should be operating here on a really precautionary principle. And what I mean by that is there are trees for which we may not yet know their significance because nobody's bothered to do the research, but actually we need to be protecting those trees. So we need to always err on the side of caution when it comes to protecting trees in Kingborough. And I'll give the example of Elstonwick Golf Course in Melbourne, where, and Gardening Australia just did a story about this, which is why I know, it was an abandoned golf course, and it was only because an amateur hobbyist started studying bird life in this case and found that one third of all Victorian birds actually were coming through this Elstonwick golf course. And as a result, rather than making apartments on it, they actually protected that area and it's a reserve. Now, it was just lucky that one meticulous hobbyist managed to find that out. Let's now translate that to the historical significance of many trees in Kingborough. Unless we're actively seeking those stories, look at Royal Botanic Gardens in Hobart. That oak tree there was planted from Winston Churchill, like it was Winston Churchill's tree that they then planted. Well, unless somebody's actively asking people in our communities about the trees that are there, and we know that there's areas of concern about significant trees, you know, there's one on Roslyn Avenue, for example, we need to be much more proactive. We need to be funding appropriately and resourcing these to enhance the community's ability to identify significant trees, and then we as a council need to be using a precautionary principle approach to protect those trees. And what a terrific idea from Councillor Midgley that we heard earlier, to have a reminder set out in the Kingborough Community Forum notes so that all the community groups on their little request form where they have their wish list that they provide to the community forum can note down the trees in their area that are of significance. I think that will be a huge improvement, because right now we've got 23 trees on the register and everybody knows of trees in their neighbourhood. When you walk past them and you say, well, that's a significant tree, it feels significant, and we might not yet know the historical significance or the cultural significance of those trees yet. I would like some reassurance, and I guess this is a question, what reassurance do I have that this register will be properly budgeted for?
Dr. Stevenson.
I guess that's a conversation for you as councillors. At the moment, it is a component of the development services workload, and there is no specific budget allocation for it, and it hasn't been needed, to be honest. It's been open for nominations, and we've received very few. Having said that, if we experience an upsurge, you can bet your bottom dollar I'll be trying to make that clear in the budget conversations going forward.
Thank you. I'll try and conclude my remarks, Mayor, by saying that I feel like we need to turn this around, to approach from the position where, because 184 submissions were made, because we know anecdotally that a huge proportion of Kingborough residents and visitors alike really value the trees in Kingborough, we need to take a trees and all policies kind of approach here and protect trees at every turn. I am still very concerned that this register, whilst I really appreciate the intention behind it and the work that has been done on it, I'm concerned that we are still going to open it up to the public as we have done before, and we just won't resource it adequately to make sure that people are aware and educated about the importance of the trees in their neighbourhood and that they have the capacity to protect those trees by embarking upon this process of the significant tree register policy. That's a concern of mine, and I think it will be ameliorated significantly by having a street tree strategy which brings this all into the fold. I will say that it's important that the community is provided education about what the options are available to them, and it's really important that we start to take a precautionary principle when it comes to protecting the trees in Kingborough. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Wass.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I would like to suggest in the public consultation that the Kingborough Chronicle be added. I believe under Luba we need a daily paper, which means the Mercury gets included, but certainly from my understanding of the Mercury statistics and people, they're walking away from the Mercury in droves, and at least I haven't got figures for the Chronicle, but people are still reading that, so I would like to see the Chronicle included if we want to get to people with a hard print. I'm concerned on a couple of issues, and one is on page 55, 4.16, the final, that the affected the landowners and general public will have the opportunity to make submissions. Previously we had it so that the landowner had to agree. Now we look like we're going the other way, that the landowner will not have any say. Is that correct?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the owner will have a say. They'll have the same opportunity as everyone else to make a submission related to the tree. This isn't that uncommon when you think of it in perspective of nominating heritage buildings, because the significant tree falls under the same ideas of the heritage buildings. You can nominate a heritage building and it doesn't necessarily need the consent of the owner, because obviously that may be prohibitive to protect things that are of significance to the greater community. So you're correct, it has been taken out, but they will have some right of reply. If they put a submission in, then they also then are able to be part of the hearings that will follow, held by the Planning Commission.
Right, thank you. So on that basis, if the group's made a decision, surely the decision is going to be upheld regardless.
Mm.
To me, it's a one-way street.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's not correct. The Planning Commission can make their own decisions, as they have done on numerous occasions with regard to development applications or other planning scheme amendments. They may choose to amend it in part or amend the whole lot or refuse the whole lot, so it's up to the Planning Commission to make the final decision.
Right, thank you. In the case where a landowner does not wish that tree to be covered and council goes about and covers it and it's therefore in, based on the location of that tree, if that tree were to fall, to drop a branch in relation to the landowner's belief that that was going to occur, whose insurance does it cover? Who pays the insurance, in other words? Let's say there's a death and a car is written off at the same time. Who is going to pay that?
Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, I can answer.
Oh, sorry, Ms. Tullamore.
Sorry. Through you, Mayor, the I don't have the definitive answer about the tree falling off people when a tree has failed, and there's very little case law about it. In fact, it's something that gets debated all the time in all states about that. If the tree is deemed dangerous, it will not be required to be retained. Public safety is our number one priority. We always have in all the decision making that we always make. We would never force someone to keep a tree that was dangerous. We would have a professional look at the tree, and the tree may require some modification. It's just the same as any other asset. It requires maintenance, and that may include pruning or other works to a tree to ensure that it's kept as safe as possible. So we don't have the answer about the liability, but certainly safety is our priority.
In 8 months last year in Victoria, 8 people were killed by falling trees. All those trees were regarded as safe. What I'm suggesting here is in a case where the landowner, if you want to put it bluntly, knows nothing about trees, even though he's lived there all his life, is told by someone with a degree that that tree is safe and that tree fails. The question I want to know is, who is liable? Why should it be the farmer who wanted the tree down or did not want it on the significant tree register? It was put there by council, might have been a submission by council staff, it might have been a submission by a neighbour, but the tree was left, and it may be a lovely tree, but the person who owned it did not want it, for in his or her words, it was a safety issue, and we've totally ignored that, and lo and behold, one or two people are killed. I'd like to know who's going
Sorry,
to be
I
liable.
Think Dr. Stevenson, I believe Ms. Tullamore had actually answered your question, but yeah. Dr. Stevenson.
Look, my belief is that because the policy does not prohibit removal for safety reasons, it's no different than an application of any other covenant or requirement similar to heritage, and I don't believe there is a liability for council, but I can take that on notice and ask our insurers.
I'd like that. I'm not thinking the liability for council as much as the liability for the landowner, particularly when he or she have said that they didn't want it, but we've imposed it. And I don't believe that they should face an insurance claim when it was not their doing, and that's the reason my question. I want to come at it that way. I want to protect our community, both in safety and not getting an insurance tap on the shoulder that you will pay X amount of dollars.
I will certainly ask our public liability insurer, and also I think it's a question we could ask Heritage Tasmania, because it must be the same in relation to heritage listings.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Grace?
Yeah, just a question on the one Councillor Wass raised, a very good point, and it does need looking into. But as I understand, if the council's not aware or the state road's not aware of the issue, or in other words, if the tree's on my property and I know it looks bad and I don't complain about it, well, then it's up to me to cover. I just want to... One other issue, Councillor Wass mentions the Chronicle. I don't think the Chronicle... I've got a lot of doubts within whether we're getting the credibility through the Chronicle. I don't think it's transparent from a lot of issues that I've had come back to me over my episode. The Chronicle is only printing what it wants or what it's told to print. Now, I think we need to look at other ways, because there's a lot of people gone away from the Chronicle. I don't support this because I can't see how you're going to manage it. I have got a tree policy register at home that was done, I think, in 2000 when Danielle Gray was here as our planner. Where did it go? Nowhere.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions before Councillor Cordova?
Just to move that amendment to add the Kingborough Chronicle, if the mover and seconder would be happy to add under 5.11 bottom of page 62, I think it is. So it says notification to landowners and adjoining landowners, a site notice, advertisement in the Mercury, and I would like to add Kimber Chronicle if they're amenable to that.
Mover and seconder happy with that? Councillor Midgley and Councillor Fox? Thank you. We'll add that to the recommendation. Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few points to note. As noted by Dr. Stevenson, it's great that this policy will work regardless the way the bylaw is framed. I'm confident that council staff will take on board the importance of education and action, noting significant trees to the register, and I hope that we do see a surge in notifications to this very important register, and I hope that council staff can keep us informed of how many trees are nominated. I don't know what report that could be in. If we could get every quarter just a little number or something like that, or even just an email could be great. Just had another note here as people were writing. Yeah, sorry, that's all. Thanks all the councillors for their comments. I think it is really important, and hopefully in a year we can note some higher registrations to this. And I also want to note Councillor Wast, they are significant comments and important comments to raise, and it'll be great to hear back from Dr. Stevenson in regards to that as well, because it is important.
Thank you very much. I will put the motion as printed in the agenda. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Could I have a show of hands, please? All those in favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone and Reet? Are you voting for it now?
No.
Okay, I'm still on the yeses. And those against is Councillor Grace. Thank you. The motion is carried. We are now moving to page 65. The matter is the Louisa Hinsby Park Landscape Plan and Funding Allocation, with a recommendation on page 71. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Councillor Gladewright is very enthusiastically waving her arm around, so I have to give her the call. And Councillor Fox, look, I know, you tried smiling, but you've had a couple, so it was line ball, so I'm trying to be fair. So Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this motion is is to present a landscape plan for Louisa Hinsby Park and to confirm a funding allocation for associated landscape and play space upgrades at the site. I note there's a beautiful landscape plan which includes timber framed play equipment, lots of plantings, and there's even interpretive signage describing the values of the plants to the Mu and Nina people, which is brilliant to see. There's a story panel on Louisa Hinsby, and I also note that there's been fantastic communication and consultation with the community, lots of engagement there, so that's really wonderful to see. Not much else to say, just that this looks absolutely wonderful and it's going to be a brilliant inclusion in the Taroona area.
Thank you very much. Councillor Fox and then Bastone.
Well, I just want to congratulate the community, the Taroona community, on the skills that they have. They're able to do the consultation and the drawings and landscape plans. They've got some very clever people. And I think this will be a real asset to the existing parks and playgrounds, and it's particularly for smaller intimate groups that might want to meet away from small children or away from dog exercising, etc. I think it's wonderful, and I note in the recommendation also that we're proposing to use public open space reserve to pay for this until the money comes through from the sale of land in another part of Taroona, and I think that's also a very good idea, so we can get on with it and do the planting, etc., during this spring season, and provide something sooner rather than later and not get the community waiting. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Cordova.
And I think this is a terrific project, but I'm going to be pedantic again. In 5.2, there is a mistake on page 69. Construction is scheduled to commence between mid-October and mid-February 2021.
Yeah.
Should be 2022.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I think there's many of us who want to put this motion and support this because the work that has been completed for this is really significant, and I thank Mr. Donnelly for producing such a great report, and it really shows his skills and expertise in this area, but also the skills and expertise in actually listening to the community. And there is no doubt, I don't live in Taroona, so I'm not biased, but I've seen the many great things that they do and the great community projects and things that they come up with. They really have some fantastic people in the community. I think even the landscaping plan was designed by one of the community members. They really value their cultural landscape, the local endemic trees, and just have a really great way that they engage and involve many different community members. So congratulations to all of those. There was just a couple of little questions. So I note Councillor Glade Wright said in regards to the play equipment being of timber and perhaps metal design, will the community be assured that it will have that sentiment versus being anything plastic? I guess will the community be engaged, you know, throughout the process and design of equipment and things like that?
The Acting General Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. The community has been engaged in the development of this plan throughout and will continue to be so, and I would imagine if they have any concerns in relation to what's going in, they will let us know very quickly.
Thank you very much. That's great to know. And if I can just have an explanation in regards to the financing and just generally, I guess, the public open space available funds, noting that it's currently $996,000. So at the moment, are the land sales, have they all gone on to that public open space fund yet? And when we think about different future plans, sorry, I hope I'm not going too off the topic, but with the Spring Farm playground in that space, like how can we be assured that all the projects that we've got planned for are going to happen? And are the sale, the funds from the land sales, are they actually being put into the public open space fund, and is there more to be put in there?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor. So, in effect, Mr. Donnelly is asking for an advance on his pocket money. So, Council have resolved to sell 110 Channel Highway Taroona, but it can't be sold until the stormwater works are done, which aren't programmed until next year, but we want to keep the momentum going. So, the report is indicating that there's 900,000-odd in the public open space at the moment. So the proposal is that we tap into that fund now, we utilise that fund to provide the 125,000 required to implement this plan, and when we sell 110 Channel Highway, we will in effect reimburse the public open space account. At this stage, we have only sold two of the properties, that being the one at Mount Pleasant and the one at Roslyn Avenue, and I'm not sure if the Roslyn Avenue property has the funding has come into the public open space account yet, but certainly the sale prices we have to date have been more than sufficient to meet the required upgrades of the playground that Council, as part of Council's resolution, we earmarked for. So in answer to your question, yes, you can be guaranteed that we have sufficient funds to do the projects that we have on our list.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd just like to highlight, as has been mentioned before, but items C and D on page 68 are primitive planting of Taruna native tree, shrub and ground cover species. The 25 species selected were used by the area's traditional owners, the Muwinina people, for food, shelter, medicine and or tools. And D, interpretive plant labels for each species describing their value to the Muwinina, designed with help from Taruna primary school students and Aboriginal consultant Trish Hodge. The reason why I want to highlight this is I am so thrilled that we are starting to embrace and will continue to embrace in future the enormous cultural and historical and significance of First Nations people, and to embrace language and culture and the natural values, the thousands of generations of unbroken chain of stories and families, and that we are now placing significance on that contribution, and we are now sharing that with people, visitors and residents of Kimbra alike, I think is so uplifting. And I'm really pleased that with the improvements that are going to be made to Louisa Hinsby, that this will be a place to rest, a place to play. It's a place where friends will gather and meet and where children will engage their imaginations. And the fact that we are making at least an effort at long last, I know that those efforts are improving and increasing, and there's so much more work to be done. But I'm just really pleased that we are making those efforts, and I would implore the council and my colleagues to continue in everything that we do to try and make those efforts. It's truly uplifting, and I think it will be a great benefit to us all.
Thank you. Councillor Gray.
I'm just wondering where I can't recall finding this in our long-term strategy, our work strategy for that park at Lowers Court there.
Through you, Mayor, Councillor Grace, it's not in our long-term capital program. It was identified as the priority project to come from the sale of 110 Channel Highway Taruna. So it's not been listed in our forward program, but when we went through that process, this was identified as being the highest priority community need for that particular
funding.
Fair
enough, I accept that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? If not, before I ask Councillor Gladewright to sum up, I just wanted to add my words of congratulations to the Taruna Community Association for the work that they have done on this over, I think, just over 2 years. There is a great dossier of all the consultation that was undertaken by them and then later on involving our urban design planner. And it's a wonderful outcome for the community. And just reading some of the comments in the summary of the consultation just shows the passion that residents have, not only for the area, but for having, an area where they feel they will have some ownership of because they've been involved in the design. And I think that is such a great way to connect communities together. So I think this is going to be a wonderful new addition to that area. So my sincere thanks to all the residents at Taruna who worked so hard on this, and I'm sure we're all looking forward to the opening of it when it's completed, because that'll be a lovely celebration to be had. Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up?
Thank you. I think you've done a really good job at summing up there, but I also just wanted to echo the sentiments that Councillor Cordova mentioned. Trish Hodge has done some interpretive plant trail up at my accommodation, and so I can speak really highly to the beautiful offerings that she has. So thank you.
Thank you. The motion, which I won't read because it's very long, but as printed on page 71, it's moved by Councillor Gladewright. It's seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Moving now to page 79. Before we do, I think we might have just a 5-minute comfort break. So if we could keep it to 5 minutes, we'll come back at 7:40. Thank you. The meeting at 7:40-ish, nearly on time. Welcome back. We're up to 16.4 on the agenda. However, I'm aware that we have a very patient member of the public gallery who had an interest in item 16.8, so I'm going to move that to be discussed now rather than have him wait for the remainder of the meeting. So so we go now to page 103 in relation to the use of anodised aluminium battens at Tinderbox Beach Reserve, with a recommendation on page 105. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Mover is Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I really support this recommendation. I know there's been quite a lot of discussion with the community on this issue, and there have been some very strong feelings expressed, and I think the recommendation recommends, as recommended, recognises those strong feelings that the community prefers to have wooden benches rather than metal and anodised ones, even though there might be some saving to council in terms of maintenance with the anodised ones, but the park benches fit into the environment down at Tinderbox, and it's the community's preference, so I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just love when the community comes to us with petitions and knowledge of their local area and provides some information and vision for what they would like to see, because they are the community that lives in that local area. I love going to Tinderbox and the carols and the great things that happen in Tinderbox and a lovely retreat on a warm day. So it's really great. So I just want to congratulate them for speaking up and having a say, and Mr. Sidebottom, who's in the audience tonight, for attending the council meeting and putting the petition to council. Just had a bit of a conversation and with Mr. Sidebottom, actually, and a few questions have arisen. Wondering, will the timber be FSC certification?
Mr. Johnson, I'd like to throw that question to you.
Yes, thank you, through you, Mayor. It will be. It's a native Australian timber species, and it will be certified.
Wonderful, thank you so much. And wondering if the local residents could be assured that for the future, if there is an upgrading to some of the infrastructure, that there can be consistency in regards to that.
Mr. Johnson.
We would make our best attempts to do that. I think what you don't want to do is lose some flexibility in locking yourself into making some decisions now that, particularly around timber species that you may or may not be able to acquire at the time. There may be some other, you know, there's always a range of issues and competing objectives. And an example at the moment is in southern Tasmania, there's nowhere to have galvanising done, for example. So I think you need to have some flexibility and be versatile in making some decisions that, you know, at particular times that may suit the actual, you know, you've got competing objectives against the look and the feel, against the cost or what's the availability or the lag time, and there's a number of considerations. So I think we would always try and consult with the community, and when you have a passionate community, as we've seen with the residents down there, we would do our best to facilitate that. But I can't fundamentally put my hand on my heart and say that there would always be consistency in that area.
Great, thank you. That's a great answer. And I guess it raises a matter as well around engagement, and I understand that we will soon be having a community engagement officer, and I know we don't engage on every single thing because that would just consume so much time of our council staff. But I guess now that we do know that there is a local and passionate community, perhaps if there are any works happening in this area in the future, that they can be engaged. And I have noted to Mr. Sidebottom as well that if they do have a community group, that we do have the Kingborough Community Forum, and perhaps he can get in touch with Mr. Stevenson to be a part of that as well.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? Just before I ask Councillor Fox if she'd like to sum up, I just wanted to thank the petitioner, Mr. Sidebottom, for his input into this and for representing the interests of the community. We appreciate this, and don't forget there are local government elections next year. We're looking for high quality candidates, so I'll just put that out there. But thank you very much for the work that you did on this, and it's pleasing that we've been able to provide the resolution that you were seeking, and that we hope that the community are very, very happy with that. So thank you for your work. I will put the motion... I'll ask Councillor Fox to sum up. No, thank you very much, Councillor Fox. So the motion as printed on page 105 and on the screen, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. There you go. We go back now to page 79, item 16.4, the Copping Refuse Site Joint Disposal Authority proposed rule change, with a recommendation on page 80. It's moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Earlier this year, we approved a change to the Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority rules so that the dividend rule was changed, so that the authority may not declare a dividend in excess of the amount recommended by the board, which was an entirely reasonable change to make. The Local Government Act requires Council's approval to make that change because it's a joint authority. And the Act also says that we need to put it out to public consultation, which we've done. Somewhat unsurprisingly, no submissions were received on this incredibly exciting topic from the public, and we now are in a position where we have to, we have to make a choice about adopting the proposed amendment. The amendment is a very good idea. I think it's financially responsible that the authority not declare a dividend in excess of what the board think is appropriate. And I commend the motion to Council.
Thank you for that eloquent contribution, Councillor Street. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to contribute? If not, I'm not going to ask you to sum up what you just said yourself, so I will put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 81, Policy 3.8, Treasury Management, with a recommendation on page 83. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that, please? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm just going to find the page. Sorry, can you tell me the page again on this one? 81, sorry, moving around. Excuse me, Mayor. So, as we can see before us, it's an update to the policy on Treasury management and the significant changes to this policy, some which are really great, that are highlighted, are the sustainability risk, that Council gives preference to fossil fuel-free authorised deposit-taking institutions when making deposits, and there's a statement that says that the rates of return on investment is greater than or equal to the rates of the authorised deposit-taking institutions. I think that's really something to celebrate, to see that we have actually added that into this policy that otherwise I probably would love someone who is more into finance to move. So I'd like to... That's a really great outcome, and I'd be interested in staff if they wanted to share perhaps any other significant changes or interest regarding this. And perhaps what was the impetus for them to put that sustainability risk in that policy?
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. I guess in essence... I think we're starting to see a trend across a number of councils now in regards to sustainability information within various policies. And so I think this one was essentially based on one put forward by the City of Rye on the mainland. And I know that Hobart Council have gone down a similar sort of track themselves. So I think it's probably a step in that direction, and I know a number of financial institutions now are starting to take steps to prove their sustainability credentials, some at the moment, and I'm pretty sure most of the major banks have committed to exiting fossil fuel industries over future periods. So this was, I guess, a step in that direction. The policy still is very much around security, so we need to make sure that the council investments are secure. We're aiming to get the best return we can from those investments, but given a choice of a bank that's involved in fossil fuel industry, one that's not, we would certainly favour the one that's not, as long as the returns are equivalent. The only other change that I probably would note is that our A2 financial institutions, we've increased that the amount that can be invested there from 20% to 30%, and this just allows us to give a bit more support to our local finance institutions like My State Financial.
Thank you, Mr. Brand. Councillor Midgley, anything further?
Thank you. I just hope that this gives more rise to banks looking at their fossil-free status as well, and we can have more options to choose from.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is just about with the sustainability risk. Is it not the case that more often than not, or is it not the case that there's a great range of authorised deposit-taking institutions which don't invest in fossil fuels and that make greater returns? Is that not true, that there's like heaps of options available to put your money in places that are actually making better returns than fossil fuels?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Essentially, I think most of the major banks, and it depends how you look at the banks, as I've indicated, have given guarantees that they will exit the fossil fuel industry at some point in time in the future. At this stage, they're the ones that have got the highest ranking because they're the most secure financial institutions. So within this policy, most of the A1 financial institutions or A-plus financial institutions will be the major banks. So what it does mean within this policy is we do have scope to deal with banks outside of those financial institutions. That's what we'll be aiming for. But I imagine there will always be some funds that will sit with the major banks.
Thanks very much. And my next question, or I should preamble my next question, if Clause A of 5.5 were to be removed, why do we need Clause A at all? Because essentially, if my reading is correct, and this is kind of a question, what we're saying by Clause A of 5.5 is if we could make more money from cooking the planet by putting our money in a fossil fuel bank, then we can still do that. And I would want to read the room and see whether or not we'd be happy to just say, as a matter of principle and leadership, why don't we just always put our money in places that don't invest in fossil fuels?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I guess the essence of this policy is around managing that credit risk. That's the key requirement. So you would have to go down that particular track, you'd have to be really confident that the banks that are rated A1, A2 don't impose significant credit risk to council, because the last thing we want to do is lose ratepayers' funds. So at this stage, that's why the policy basically sets that credit risk first, return second, sustainability third.
Thank you. Well, I'll just make the point that we're absolutely on the right track by trying to have ethical investments and stop the cooking of the planet by taking our money away from people who are trying to cook it, and that is the fossil fuel industry. We are in a climate emergency and there's a climate breakdown occurring, and the way that we can mitigate that is by partially through, you know, through protest and through politics, but also through market, you know, and making the right, pulling the right levers for the market to make sure that we head in the right directions with respect to renewables and things like that. I just heard that the principle here is you know, number one, credit rating, number two, return, and number three is sustainability. And I would say, of course, we need to actually flip that as well. That it should be number one, sustainability, number two, you get the drift. So okay. Return's pretty important. Mm-hmm. So anyway, on that, at this stage, I won't move the amendment to strike A, but I just want it on the record that I think that we shouldn't really have that caveat there, that no matter what, we should be taking a leadership role with where we put ratepayers' money, and it should always be in ethical investments, because in the same way that we wouldn't want to put our money into the tobacco industry or into the arms industry, we also don't want to be putting our money into fossil fuels. I applaud these changes that from now on we have this sustainability risk and that we will be avoiding fossil fuel investments with authorised deposit-taking institutions. I think we're well on our way and more work is to be done, but this is what climate action looks like and more to come. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
It's an interesting discussion, but I do think we're being a bit hypocritical because Council has cars, owns cars, which are driven by petrol, and I'm sure most banks lend money to people buying cars. In fact, I'd say that even my state or others who purportedly aren't involved in fossil fuels would still lend money to people who want to buy cars that are running on fossil fuels. So it's just about impossible to decide categorically that we are making an ethical investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to reinforce, I guess, what Mr. Breen said and remember Huon Valley Council investments a number of years ago.
Thank you. No further speakers. In that case, Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Cordova, for always the sentiments that sometimes I think I'm a bit of a soft green sometimes. But, yeah, thank you for reminding us of the importance of this divestment. And it is, I guess for me, I supported this motion because it is a move in the right direction, and I hope it is a move that we'll continue to see in the future that will be stronger and strengthened by the industry and by the banks. So I think it's a stepping into the right direction. And that's why I could take that stronger line and actually push that we remove the A, but I would like to just take incremental steps and perhaps hopefully in the next time, and hopefully I'm in council for the next term, that we can actually see a significant change around for the future, for the planet.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. The motion as printed that the updated Treasury Management Policy 3.8 be approved and implemented. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 97, the Southern Obedience Club lease, with a recommendation on page 99. Do I have a mover? I have a mover in Councillor Grace, a seconder in Councillor Midgley, doing a lot of heavy lifting tonight, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace.
I think most of us all know the history with the CWA and...
No, wrong item. We're on the one previously. Page 97. It's the dogs.
Sorry, have I missed one, have I?
You have, yeah. Southern Obedience Club.
Okay, sorry.
Can we go backwards like that? Because it's already been moved. Okay, all right. Well, all right, let's have a Groundhog Day moment and go backwards. We're at the Southern Obedience Club lease on page 97 with a recommendation on page 99. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So just for the public record, these leases come to us through Council, and this one's in regards to Southern Obedience Club lease. They provide dog obedience training for their 200 members. I was quite interested to read in this one, especially because we do have a plan for the Kingborough Sports Precinct. And I note that it says there's a lease condition will include a clause that will enable the agreement to be cancelled if the site is required for the development of alternative community facilities. There's a lot of movement and growth in this space. I know the Athletics Club would like to see a 400 metre track, and we have plans, so who knows in the future if we do have any federal funding to progress the Kingston Sports Precinct plan, that it's great to see that we have that clause in place. And like many of our other peppercorn rentals that we provide to the community, there's a broader community benefit that it provides a valuable community service contributing to social connectivity and physical activity. And I do note there's often a couple of people there when I drive up and down to soccer matches.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there any further contributions? If not, I assume you don't want to sum up yourself, so I will put the motion, moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox, as printed on the screen. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We now move to page 100 with a recommendation on page 102. It's in relation to the Barnes Bay Hall lease. A mover in Councillor Grace, seconder in Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace. That's all right. Pop your light on though so we can hear you. Thanks.
Now, I doubt whether any of us would disagree with this. They've been hold of that hall for 25 years and they've always maintained it to a very good standard. And we often have progress meetings there every three or four. Turn around, Councillor Bastone's been there. And
many times.
Many times. So I wish him well for another 25 years.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Midgley.
I just have a question on proposed financial arrangements. Proposed the lessee has responsibility for all the outgoings associated with the use of the premises. Does this include the public liability insurance on the premises?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So the premises wouldn't carry public liability insurance. Public liability insurance is specific to an organisation. So CWA would need to carry their own public liability insurance to protect them against any claims arising out of their use of the premises. Mm. So a facility in itself doesn't carry public liability insurance.
So, thank you, sorry. So how does this differ from the Lunawanna Hall and the public liability that the council assumes for the Lunawanna Hall?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the difference is that the Lunawanna Hall is managed by a hall management committee. They are constituted as a special committee of council under Section 24 of the Local Government Act, and by virtue of that, the members of the management committee are covered under council's public liability policy. And because it is a hall that is being, in effect, managed by a committee of council, the users of that facility are also covered under council's policy. Because this particular hall is being leased out, it's being, in effect, leased to a third party, it's not a committee of council that is managing it. Our public liability insurance does not extend to cover a third party, and nor can it.
So, just continuing on to that, so does this mean that the Dens Point Hall is not covered by council because that's leased to a third party?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, there's a difference between what happens at the Dens Point. There is a Dens Point Hall that has a Dens Point Hall Management Committee. We lease out the cafe and we lease out the gallery. Now, the cafe operator would need to hold their own public liability insurance, as would the gallery operator. But the actual hall itself, which is the public facility, which is covered by a committee of council and therefore our policy.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. And not at all to, undermine what the CWA does, but I'm just wondering what other activities does the CWA do in the community? Do we know, or what else do they run at the hall, at the premise, and how often do they use it?
Mr. Smee?
My understanding is that the hall is used on a weekly basis. They use it for meetings, they use it for their fundraising activities,
And bearing in mind, they're not a large group. I think the report indicates they only have 19 members, so I don't think you can expect that it's going to have a great deal of use, but they also hire the hall out for the use by the community, and as Councillor Grace has indicated, you know, it's used for meetings for the Bruny Island Community Association and is available for a range of other community uses.
Thank you. And just to understand, so no other community group has ever come to council with an interest in being responsible for the hall or being more involved in that hall, or has council ever considered putting it out to the Bruny Island community to say that the lease is up for renewal?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, I guess the most important point to note is that the original lease signed 25 years ago gave them an option, and given that they have fulfilled the terms and conditions of that lease, they have the right to exercise the option. So we couldn't advertise this one, given the fact that they've got an option. Once that option expires, then perhaps we could. But we've not had any groups express an interest in managing this hall. I'm not sure that we would if we were to advertise it, but I guess the key point is we couldn't advertise it in this instance because of their right to exercise an option.
Great, thank you. It's just great to have that background and understanding, and thanks to the CWA for their great work.
Thank you. If there are no further contributions, Councillor Grace, did you want to sum up? No. So we'll put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Bastone. It's as printed on the agenda. All those in favour? Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. We've dealt with the next item, so we go to page 107, the financial report for August, with a recommendation on page 108. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Anybody? Anyone? Thank you, Councillor Cordova and Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Here we have the August 2021 financial report, information for the public and for council to review. And essentially, yet again, we see another period of time where statutory fees and fines are over budget, user fees are over budget, primarily due to stronger than expected revenue from the sports centre. Grants recurrent are over budget, primarily due to grant income carried forward. Employee costs are $100,000 under budget, primarily due to no enterprise agreement increase being paid to date as negotiations are still underway. And so I'll just at that point note that there was a question without notice from the public about that today. In addition, the works area is undertaking significant capital works which reduce the level of operational employee costs. I thought I would, and I'll take the rest as read, but I thought I might ask a specific question to the author, because I'm famed for often asking very broad and general questions about what do you want us to take from this report? No, that was actually a pretty good question. What do we want to, what are the highlights of this report?
8:10, Councillor Cordova, Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor, very briefly. Look, I think in essence it's been a pretty solid start to the year. Most areas are pretty well on track in line with budget. It is a positive that our FAGS grants are $150,000 over budget, and I think that will continue on into the future. So apart from that, probably the other thing to note is the user fees being comfortably over budget, and we've seen this trend a lot with the Sports Centre over the last couple of years. They're certainly getting full usage. They're getting a lot of use of the kiosk, a lot of revenue being generated through that source. So certainly at this stage, things are looking pretty positive, and my hope is that in the mid-year review that we bring forward in December, there may be some opportunities for council to bring forward some additional expenditure.
Oh, you've set the cat amongst the pigeons now. Thanks, Mr. Breen.
Thank you. Bring forward financial expenditure. You heard it here first. To conclude my remarks, please, Mayor, yet again I'll just make that clarion call that I think that there is a disconnect between the perception of the finance among the community and some councillors, that the situation's dire, that we're running out of money, and the reality, which we hear period after period, which is that this council is very well financially managed. We are a very fiscally prudent council, and we have the best interests of the community at heart when it comes to the expenditure of ratepayers' funds. And as a result, I would make the call yet again that I think we do need to focus more on things like community grants, on climate action, on making sure that we take care of the vulnerable, and we use council funds obviously responsibly and judiciously, but we do it in such a way that it leaves no one behind. So I want to again commend the author and authoriser of this report. I want to emphasise that this council is well financially managed, and we will continue to do so into the future. And onwards and upwards. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question regarding why isn't the play space at Spring Farm or Whitewater Park Estate on the Capital Works budget of this finance report?
Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I'm aware there's one park that came about after the budget was initially put together. So it's certainly in the plans and it's in the works, but it didn't, it only was finalised in time to go into the capital expenditure report, which is in front of you today.
Oh, okay. So that can't be amended as time goes, or can it be? Will it be in the next one? Just, I think people in the community would like it to be in there, so they can be assured that things are going to be happening.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I guess my understanding is that the report stands as it is, as approved by council. So that's the reason it's not in there. But I'm certainly aware that. I think it's the Spring Farm works are approved by council and therefore will need to be funded.
Do you have a further question, Councillor Midgley?
I just want to say thank you very much, and hopefully that provides some clarification for community members.
Thank you. Any further speakers? If not, we will put the motion that council endorses the attached financial report as at the 31st of August 2021, moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to the Development Services Quarterly Report on page 129 with a recommendation on page 134. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Wake up. I'm going to just wait till somebody...
I'll move it. It's fine.
Councillor Midgley, I owe you some chocolate. Thank you, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So I think it's really great that we get a Development Services Quarterly Report, and I encourage community members who are still listening to read this, because it provides us with a great understanding of the great work that the planning staff are doing, and we get the charts in regards to the growth in the past 5 years. We can see how busy they are. We get an update in regards to different subdivision applications that are currently in, as is noted around Huntingfield, state government subdivision application, and also information about the planning scheme and any provisions or updates in regards to that, because so many things come across our desk, so it is great that these are written down. And I just it takes time for staff to actually put this forward as well, so putting this together, so I thank them as well for putting this together. And it's great as well to have a planning appeal update in regards to where things are, because the interesting one is at 36 Jenkins Street, that was quite, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm quite sure that was quite controversial by many community members. So it's great to see the outcome of certain areas in the building and plumbing and grants and things like that. So I note the recommendation, just notes it to be noted. I do have a couple of questions, Mayor, and I'll just go to those. So the first one was in regards to, and sometimes public actually do email me a couple of questions in regards to these reports, just to note. So item 2.7 shows the outcome of the Director of Housing's appeal re-including a slip lane in the conditions of the Huntingfield roundabout, the outcome being that the condition for a slip lane has been removed from the permit. There's some community members who aren't sure that they knew about this update. Is it being promoted to the community, and is there evidence that the government will still build a slip lane at the same time as constructing the roundabout, not at a later date?
So as councillors would be aware, we held a closed council meeting to resolve this issue It had to be in closed session because we were still technically in the tribunal after the state government appealed the condition of the slip lane that we inserted into the planning permit for the roundabout. I had many, many discussions with Minister Ferguson in relation to this, and he gave initially verbal undertakings, but then in writing that the state government would indeed build the slip lane. They weren't able to give a specific time frame that they would build it. They did place on record in writing that they would lodge the DA for the slip lane before the end of this calendar year. And certainly in the discussions that I had with Minister Ferguson, he indicated that they would, you know, move fairly quickly to act on that. Obviously, from Council's perspective, we would prefer it if they undertook the works at the same time. That is a little bit out of our hands now, but I note that we have Minister Ferguson coming to meet with us as a council on Wednesday afternoon, and that might be an opportune moment to raise that issue. And because certainly it is our intention, you know, we started that process without a slip lane at all. We've achieved that as a collective, and I would hope that common sense would prevail and the two items would be done together. You would think from a contractor's perspective and a cost saving that would make sense as well.
Thank you very much for that update, Mayor, and hopefully we have enough time to ask Minister Ferguson all these questions that we have
list
for him. Second question is just in regards to the planning directive number 8 with the public consultation. So just noting on the Council Facebook page, is that the one, or is it a different one around the planning reform? The Minister for Local Government and Planning has released the Tasmanian planning policies. And I note that it says how to make a submission, and it's quite cumbersome and time-consuming for community members to understand these big documents and submissions, but I thought it would be really important for community members to actually understand. And I note that it says... Oh, sorry, it's a different one. Oh, whoops.
Yeah, you're on 2.1 because that consultation is closed.
Oh, I am. Okay, that one's closed. Sorry, yeah. No. Yeah, that's different to this one. I'm just looking at the one on the website. Where is that one in here? Oh, 2.4. Sorry, 2.4. That's what I meant to look at. Sorry, excuse me. So the scoping paper for the Tasmanian planning policies. Is that the one that I'm referring to? Okay, just getting the terminology right. So just noting that it is a really important policy, and I'm sure that council staff are making a submission to that. It'd be interesting to have a look at that submission. If at all that's possible, but also, you know, anyone in the community could make a submission, but they're saying as well that if you would like further information or a briefing, to contact the Planning Policy Unit. And I'm just wondering council staff's thought on perhaps contacting and asking for a briefing and promoting that one to the community to see if any local community members perhaps would like to attend a briefing to understand it further, to inform them to make a decision.
So are you suggesting that council ask to have a briefing that we invite members of the community to attend?
That's right. Thank you, Mayor, for summing that up.
Just clarifying, it's getting late in the night.
Thank you.
Just to clarify that at this stage, the consultation is only on the principle of the policies. It's not on the policies themselves. So it's really to say, do you agree with the themes and how they relate to the planning system?
That's right, isn't it, Tasha?
And Alamore.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct, but that's certainly the starting point, and I think that it's easily accommodated to ask for that briefing should the councillors collectively want that briefing. It's something we could host.
Yeah. But just it's not getting into the specifics of what does the hazard and risk policy look like at this stage. So just in terms of managing community expectations, this is about the principle of having planning policies and how they influence our planning system.
Thank you. Are there any further? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got a question about the chart comparing the number of planning permit applications over the past 5 years. And my first question is about, do we ever do any kind of forecasts about what we anticipate will happen? That's my first question.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we do forecasts in two forms. One is a guess of what we think it's going to do. Staff have the opportunity to guess what the final number is, which is just a nice,
is that like a
light-hearted way.
Jelly beans.
It is like a sweep. But also we look at the trends that occur. So when I produce these statistics, we look at where the peak is, because obviously we had the pandemic and the slowness with that, and then we look at what other grants are that have come out, but we can only really look in past rather than future, because we never know what the state government's or the federal government's going to pull out of the hat. That's going to do that, but based on these statistics, you can see if the trend continues that we will reach another peak number of applications.
Thank you. And if I'm reading it correctly, the planning fees are currently $318,000 over budget this year, because, as I can see it, looking at this chart, and I recommend that the community actually looks at it as well, because I've been on the council 2 years now, and in my time we've just seen an inexorable increase in the number of planning permit applications being made, and the line for those at home is just a straight line upwards over the past 5 years. I guess I would make the point that if I were running a business that was consistently growing in that kind of a direction, I would be really cognizant about asking sensible questions like whether or not our fees and charges are at the right level, whether or not it's sustainable in terms of the number of staff that I had to manage that. And so I guess I would just raise the point that as the municipality continues to grow, I think we should be regularly reviewing our fees and charges to make sure that that we are preparing this council to deal with what appears to me to be inexorable growth. And if we don't, then I think it will come at the cost of slower service and, you know, more stressed staff, and also potentially, overlooking some important matters for consideration. I'm suggesting that you can't grow inexorably without trying to either moderate or take appropriate and measured responses to robustly deal with that inexorable increase. So I'll just leave that thought with you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I've just got a question regarding the progress of the 19 council adopted recommendations of the 2019 planning review. It says, as reported, quite a few of the recommendations have all been completed, but does that mean... what does completed mean? Does that mean they've taken on board that recommendation and adopted the recommendations, or they have? Oh, fantastic. That's good to hear.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? If not, Councillor Midgley summing up? No. Thank you. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova, that the Development Services Quarterly Report be noted. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 136, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and tender assessment, AB 2110 TS 3036, Kingston Park Public Open Space Stage 2 Construction, Kingston. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council...